this time, I'd like to bring up a bill that has passed out of the HESS committee, but in the finance committee, a committee that I serve on, and so we set it a chance, and this would be committee substitute for Senate Bill 610. And at least this time, I'd like to ask Marshall Lynn, Nat Cole, and Bill Thompson to come up to the table if they would. The committee substitute for Senate Bill number 610. And at this time, the question that I have on this bill is Department of Education Agency's comments on the committee substitute. My main interest, although I think that many of the committee members here have an interest in the foundation program, my problem stands in, I think, possibly the committee may wish to ask questions about the foundation program in Anchorage and the foundation program in other areas of the state and see what the comments and issues in the department. Mine deals with committee substitute dealing with sections one. What I'd like to ask is how the department came up with their findings. The energy package does not help all the areas.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Dr. Cole respond to a particular question. He did the analysis of the various sections of the particular bill. I'd like to have him respond to that.
Yes, we took the 1975 average electrical cost and applied the formula that's shown in the bill here and applied it to each one of the REAAs. Only three or four of them, five I think, came under any subsidy with that formula.
If I may make a suggestion, in reading the bill it doesn't deal with the REA specifically, or it does in a way, but deals with individual communities within the REAs, and I'm just wondering whether you took the time to analyze it in that perspective. Doctor, if you could explain how the formula works.
I just want to ask one question, that is, did the department only consider the electrical, or did the department also consider the heat, the sewer, and the water?
We considered both AVEC and water.
So you didn't include the fuel oil for heating or village safe water. You did include the village safe water, okay, but not the heating fuel oil.
Not the heating oil.
Okay, that's what I thought. Therefore, the numbers are consistent.
Can you give us an example of the probably inequities that must be out in the REAs and your plan to remedy the situation?
Well, first of all, we agree, have no argument that there are excess costs and there are problems with formalizing, or at least the present form that's in the foundation law for providing subsidy for those excess costs. We have most of you here are aware of the history of the AVEC operation, particularly in some of the safe water problems. Basically, what's happened is that these subsidies to these programs, or I guess you could call them subsidies, at least the cost factors to school districts and to individual school sites are considerably more than the cost would be if they were set some per kilowatt hour and paid for it that way, although the price structure hasn't created a problem until the regional education attendance areas were broken out of all the state operated schools. Averaged over the whole system, this was not too bad cost factor. But now that we have certain regional education attendance areas with numbers schools in them that are paying $33,000 minimum for electricity, another $30,000-$40,000 for safe water. These cost factors are eating them up. But we fully recognize them. It's, I believe, our position that might better be handled to establish a rate for the school districts to pay or the REAAs to pay in a subsidy manner and set the subsidy in some other agency of the state. We have recommended that the Community Regional Fire would be probably the best agency since they deal with the government. We have no way opposed to this. We think, you know, the factors are too high. Putting it in the Department of Education or in the formula itself skews the educational costs so drastically that that creates a problem. You can't build formulas very easily.
Okay, under the SOS system that was here before, was the, say, the funds line item for electricity?
Line item, yes. They were part of contractual services identified, the sites identified, the flat rate structure plugged in, and it just went into the budget.
Okay, are all the REAs going to make it with the budget that they have under the foundation formula the way it is now?
We don't believe so. We don't know, but we don't believe so.
Okay, what is your alternative? This is what I'm trying to get at.
I can see two possible alternatives. One is a formula such as this, and I think I've said, you know, not that pleased with doing it that way. Another approach would be to go ahead and estimate something and set up a contingency fund until a total analysis can be done and another mechanism to handle the total of ABEC and safe water. Our recommendation, I think, would be to address ABEC and safe water statewide. Provide that through some other mechanism.
I think we both agree on that, but I haven't seen anything from the department to say help out in the extraordinary cost for the new REAs that are out there. I understand the feeling of providing equitable education to all our districts. We have a problem that is facing our REAs now. I'm having copies made of the comments, agency's comments on this. The bill not only deals with the problem of the inequity in the foundation formula, it also deals in, say, increasing the foundation formula upwards. What's the recommendation of the department to take care of the foundation needs?
The department recommendation, of course, in the general sense of funding is for the legislature to take a look at the increase over the present year that may be built in legislation already. If you recall, $1,500 on the instructional unit is built in automatically. Look at that compared to the best estimate of inflation, which looking at deflation of inflation runs our guess from 8% and 10%. Somehow fund that. And that mechanism best accomplished to the
At what level?
Well, it would be somewhere between $500 and $1,000 over the $25,000.
So, the Committee 70% Bill 610 asked for $26,000, I believe.
That's correct.
So we're right on the ballpark there. It also asked for an increase in the ceiling, or lifting the ceiling up. What's the position of the department on that?
I think that, again, Mr. Chairman, it goes along with the fact that we would like to not make substantial changes of a permanent nature in the foundation support formula until such time as a more thorough analysis can be done. We recognize also that the change in the formula, changing from 23 to 21, will have an impact on two school districts, primarily Anchorage and Fairbank. We recognize that at least in one of those school districts, they do have the largest pupil-teacher ratio. They also have the largest amount of local support going into their school. Maybe this is some indication that the formula as it presently exists needs some alteration, but we're just a little bit uncomfortable at this point in time making a specific change until a better analysis can be made of the points I'm raising. That's basically our view.
I didn't, yes, Senator Sackman.
Just curious, is the position of the department with regard to this committee substitute in favor of the bill, or are you opposed to the bill?
We are not opposed to the bill. We are not in favor of the bill. Basically, our general concern is if we put this in the statute, the formula change, we're concerned as to whether or not this is going to do the job. We recognize the job needs to be done, particularly addressing the specifics that you have.
So other than waking, do you have any recommendations?
Just the one that Mr. Cole mentioned, that there be some way of providing contingency or some provision with the legislative intent how this money would be used during this next year until such time as a thorough analysis can be made with recommendations coming back to the legislature for a more permanent change. We don't at the present time, but I think it would be a very simple matter for us to write it up, and we'd incorporate much of what is in this committee substitute.
Actually, the comments themselves, number two under eight, the recommendation was aimed at that timing might be such as be a concern to you, but comment two really says let's take a good look at what's going on, it would take some resources, dollars, to do an analysis. Let's do an analysis and report back, say at the end of the first month, the next legislative session, ample time for supplemental to cover those. That's basically our recommendation.
I apologize to the committee for asking so many questions. In fact, I've asked for this bill to come up, and what I'd like to do at this time is turn over the chair to the vice chair, Jeannie, so I may inquire about using the chair as a place to pay for this. What you're advocating is for a resolution that was introduced by the Senate HGSS committee to be passed, authorizing the legislative council to do a study on the foundation formula, which is inequitable, I understand. The other is for the REAAs and Anchorage and Fairbanks to wait for another year until the study is done. That's right.
Not exactly. We recognize that this next year there are going to be some unique costs which we have not been able to analyze further because we don't have actual expenditures at this point in time for this REA structure. This is where about three-fourths of the questions emanate. If we had the latitude with specific directions from the legislature to allocate to the REAs to meet these additional costs during that interim, then come back in and address it with legislation next year in the formula. That, in our view, would be the best way to do it because, as I said, it's not a matter of our concern of giving them too much money by any means. We are also concerned that the formula might not be sufficient after we do a further analysis of their expenditures. Now all we have are the budgeted figures. We don't have actual expenditures in the unorganized borough of the state. We never have had for a lot of the specifics that we're talking about here. That's why we're at a very, very much a disadvantage at this point. But I think within the year we can do that. So it isn't a matter of just saying to the people to wait another year.
Okay, if I may, through the chair, one of the things that we did was draft up the formula, draft up a bill that would address the education rates throughout the state, one that would hold up in any community without having to wait. The resolution that has passed the Senate requesting that a study be done on the foundation formula would also address itself to this new language, which could be repealed after the study was done if it was shown to be inequitable. But I maintain that the bill is better than what we have and it will suffice. I doubt whether any area will have a problem in the state of Alaska if we pass this bill.
No, I haven't.
I have one question I'd like to ask you, talking about, rather than enacting this with a formula, you'd rather have a lump sum appropriated to take care of these extraordinary expenses when you're getting exactly in your experience. On what would you base an estimate of what the lump sum would be?
We would probably use some aspects of this amended version of the bill. In addition to that, we would use the information that has been supplied to us by the unorganized borough school district, some of our own estimates based on budgeted figures, not expenditures. From that, I think we would probably be pretty close. Just don't know. That would serve as the basis for our allocation. And I think we would want that made very clear with the legislature as far as the intent of that specific money. We'd be uncomfortable with a large collection of money without some pretty clear understanding just what areas are to be addressed with this and approximately how that formula would work.
Well, then wouldn't it work out better for us to lay a formula like this on you and use this formula for this year rather than by next year, we'll be able to figure out how we need to address the problem?
Our major reluctance with that is once the formula gets set into law, the problems that we have, some new members of the legislature in another year attempting to change it. And it's just a concern that we have. If we get something in, it's just really going to do the job, and we're going to be able to change it after that.
Through the chair, are we still, or is the department still maintaining its support for Senate Bill 491, Amendment 74, for the deletion of that? The other question that I have, although it would not be, say, a trade-off, I think once we took a certain amount of funding away from one area, that they should have some way to become, say, put in a position where they can maintain what they've already been offering. I don't see any piece of legislation addressing itself to that. Do you have any plans?
There isn't anything that's coming out from us that will offset the loss that would occur with the 874.
So what we're saying in the sense is that Anchorage and Fairbanks are given $1.3 million too much in state revenues.
I think the Mini 874 is probably a good example of the kind of concern that we have, where something is specifically with the loopholes in it. An attempt to change that, to correct that later on, becomes very difficult because the district is receiving money on a certain basis. They're budgeting for it, and then an attempt to come in and change that becomes very difficult. So we're constantly find ourselves looking for other ways to offset the loss in that particular area. We could run into the same kind of thing, possibly with certain aspects of this particular area.
Okay, the last question I have is, if committee substitute for Senate Bill 610 were to pass the legislature, would you have any objections at that time?
If it were to pass
the legislature,
well, we would do everything we could to implement it as you've outlined.
I have no further questions.
I have one more to ask. Do you have in mind how much money it would take in this lump sum fund to reduce that money?
We would take the figures involved here, and I imagine we would be talking in terms of what, about 9 million?
No, we're only talking about, I think what we're looking at, sections 2, 3, and 4, or 1, 2, and 3 of the bill. Section 4 is clean, and whatever goes after, it's easy to administer, we've got the structure part. Apparently, what we would need probably would be some special appropriation directions as far as the recoup from all of the acres of fire banks, excess costs of electricity and operation of small schools. And that would be roughly 1.4, 1.5, about 2.9 of the 3 million, somewhere in that vicinity, according to our numbers now. I believe Senator Ferguson has other data there on the utility costs that would run it higher.
Well, if I may, in your recommendation that was given to a member of the Finance Committee, you had a number of REAs that would not receive any benefit. And there are only two that are not. One would be ADAC, and the other one would be the Southern Panhandle. The rest of every other REA would receive extra funding to take care of an inequity or an extra cost. The problem I have, Madam Chairman, is what I consider unwillingness to at least participate in, well, let me put it this way. We have a bill, committee substitute, and had the bill been followed, I think we would have came up with the same figures.
Are there any other questions?
Thank you, Dr. Lynn and Matt and Bill for coming in and talking this way. At this time, I'll take up the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 658. And I believe we have Dr. Williamson here.
Is that what comes out of 58 is? All right, Mr. Chairman, I am due across the street right now for a rather important meeting on corrections, so I would like to restrict what I have to say, just some brief introductory remarks. Deputy Commissioners McGinnis and Lloyd are here together with Mr. Long, and Dr. McGinnis will be the person from our department who will have the responsibility for the implementation of the Child Support Enforcement Agency based in Anchorage. The department has already had approved a state plan by the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare in Region 10, and further has developed a position paper which you have before you, and two other documents, one on the functional processes required by the bill, another one on the requirements for states under the terms of Public Law 93647 and Public Law 9488. And we have also provided you with a fiscal note that details to the extent presently possible what we feel will be required in terms of state general funds and federal financial participation. We have run into one snag with respect to a thoroughgoing and completely accurate accounting of the funds required, in that we have not yet been able to determine the extent to which there will be AFDC eligibles involved and eligible for federal financial participation. We know that we are dealing at the present time with about 5,000 cases, and that we will be dealing ultimately with an estimated 8,113 cases, with a known number of AFDC eligibles of a little over 2,000. And it is our considered view that the participation, the relative participation financially of the state and of the federal government will be on about a 50-50 basis and be in the order of $527,000 of state general funds. The other comments I have are that if we do not implement this law in Alaska, there will be a penalty of 5% on our AFDC program, which would amount to something on the order of $350,000 to $400,000. But and other things related to the cost, I'd like to say that every state involved so far in this kind of a program has found it to be cost effective, and we also believe that will be the case in Alaska. And it's run in other states about $3 to $1 spent in the effort of seeking court-ordered child support. I personally have had some problems with the program, in that in some aspects it doesn't seem to be the kind of activity that I like to see our department involved in. On the other hand, I think it can have some important benefits. As far as the financial implications are concerned, the $350,000 to $400,000 penalty, if we don't implement, would be a loss of funds to the state. But more importantly, at this point, we really don't know the extent to which we will be able to remove people from assistance roles. And additionally, we don't know, if we don't implement the law, how many people we would be adding to AFDC assistance roles in the future. And both of these, of course, have fiscal implications. At the same time, I think with judicious selection of certain individuals who will be involved in this process, there will be an opportunity to counsel parents. And I think it has been demonstrated elsewhere that at least it focuses some attention on absent fathers, and could provide us with an opportunity to do some counseling that has true social consequences. And I think we all agree that people on assistance rolls, or people being removed from assistance rolls, has social consequences in terms of self-esteem and the extent to which this affects all members of the family, particularly children, when they very rapidly identify the source of their parents' income or parent income. And in the intake process, there is a point, and this is in the flow charts that you have before you, in the intake process there is an opportunity for a counseling of a member of the program with the applicant. Similarly, there is an opportunity during the locator process for contact with that individual who has failed to provide court-ordered child support. At these points, I think that the department can have some influence on the welfare of people, quite aside from the economic considerations that the bill implies. And I think I'll restrict my comments to that and request that Dr. McGinnis and Deputy Commissioner Lloyd be allowed to answer all of your questions.
Are there any questions by committee members?
22 new positions.
Something like that.
Thank you, Doctor.
You bet.
Do you have anything further to add?
Not in the way of general introduction, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to pick up on some of the chances of the question. Yeah, I think it should be pointed out that if the state is going to move into the area of serious business of child support enforcement, it is for this state, as every other state, a major undertaking. It's roughly comparable to any of the major programs, agency programs, by virtue of its caseloads. For example, while the functions are not identical to AFDC, food stamps, Medicaid, and many of those, including certain comparable programs and other departments of state government, there are more similarities to those programs than there would be dissimilarities. And as the commissioner indicated, we are now speaking of a minimum of 5,000 caseloads to be serviced and moving readily toward another 3,000, up to 8,000 caseloads, each of which, under the provisions of the sponsor substitute for 659 and also the related public law 93647 and 9488, it is a major undertaking to do the job and do it well, as well as we can. Now, of those positions, it should be pointed out that 14 of them are truly new positions. Four of them will be related to law, Department of Law. Four are transferred equivalences from the court system, and seven are existing. So when you consider the seven existing, the eight transfers from law and court, then that would leave a balance of 14 additional positions.
Any further questions? Thank you, Doctor. We have Susan Burke here to testify to the court system. Could you give me your name and position you hold for the record?
Yes, I'm Susan Burke, staff counsel for the Administrative Office of the Court System. And I think it might be useful for the committee for me to run through briefly the history of child support, and very briefly, the history of child support enforcement from the court's point of view and what our position is with respect to this bill and the proposed agency in the Department of Health and Social Services. Since the early 1960s, the only child support enforcement program that the state had in any form was in the court system with personnel designated as court trustees. And as a matter of history, as a matter of practice, and simply because there was no one else to do it, in addition to simply taking the money in from non-custodial parents, doling it out to the parent who had custody of the children, the court trustees began doing a good deal more in the way of enforcement, including such things as requiring people to come into their offices to discuss delinquencies in child support payments, if there was an apparent ability to pay, trying to encourage that person to pay, short of being hauled into court on a contempt charge, and as a last resort, doing just what I mentioned, asking the court to issue an order to show cause why the person should not be held in contempt for failure to abide with the court's child support. sometime in the late 1974, various people in the court, judges, administrators, including myself, were a little bit concerned about having judicial officers and judicial employees coming into court essentially on behalf of the custodial parent. You could argue that it was simply enforcing the court's order, but when it came down to brass tacks, the court trustee was really representing the custodial spouse and those children trying to get child support on the contempt charges. Mr. Snowden, as administrative director, appointed a committee composed of Judge Carlson, Judge Stewart, myself, the court trustee from Anchorage, the court trustee from Fairbanks, in order to look at this aspect of the propriety of the court trustee's enforcement activities within the context of the judicial branch of government. This committee came to the conclusion that there were philosophical problems with it, that perhaps it wasn't, the appearances were quite right, having employees of the judges representing really one party to a lawsuit, hauling people into court and perhaps sending them to jail. To that end, we recommended to ARC that legislation might be sought to establish a child support enforcement agency in an executive department. We shared some of Commissioner Williamson's concerns about the proper role of health and social services. We discussed other possibilities, but didn't really come to any conclusions. Just about the time our committee made its recommendations to Mr. Snowden, Congress passed public law, whatever it is, 97-93-647, requiring states to establish a unified child support enforcement agency with the sanction of cuts in AFDC funds, federal contributions, in the event that the state did not comply with the federal standards. That being the case, we decided legislation was perhaps not necessary, and we began working with the Department of Law and with the Department of Health and Social Services to try to develop a program. In April of 1975, another significant event happened with regard to the court's role in child support enforcement, and that was the Supreme Court's decision of Public Defender Agency versus Superior Court. There were several questions raised in that case, one question being whether the court could order the Attorney General's office to prosecute a civil contempt action. The other question was, brought up by the Department of Law, whether or not, in fact, the court trustee was the proper person to be doing this. The court in that decision said, no, there is a doctrine called separation of powers, and the Attorney General has absolute executive authority and discretion to decide what cases he's going to take and prosecute and what ones he isn't, and the court simply can't order the Attorney General to do that. More significant in terms of this bill, the court also said it was probably unconstitutional, by the same token as a violation of separation of powers, for the court trustee to be engaging in these prosecutorial functions. The upshot of it is that the court can no longer prosecute people for civil contempt, therefore cannot suggest or threaten the possibility of contempt for failure to abide by these orders, and one of, I think, the very most effective tool in child support enforcement is not available to the court trustee. What that means now is that all the court can do is to be a conduit of the funds. The non-custodial parent pays the money in, we keep track of it, monitor it, keep track of the arrearages, pay the money out to the custodial parent, tell people when they're in arrears, but beyond that, engaging in active enforcement, prosecutorial activity, the Supreme Court has said that the court employees really can't do that. The court takes the position that this is an important governmental function. People who are the recipients of child support really can't afford private lawyers for the most part to prosecute these cases. They may be working and therefore not technically eligible for legal services, but really without recourse in the event that they have a child support order requiring the spouse to pay child support and the person fails to do it. If they're financially able to pay and there's a willful noncompliance, I believe it's important important for the state to provide some mechanism whereby those orders can be enforced. Our position is strongly in support of this agency. We can't do what really needs to be done. I think this agency can do it, and I think it's important. And the court system, as I say, is very strongly in support, urges passage of this bill and support from the legislature for the program.
Are there any questions from my committee members?
Mr. Chairman,
how many states already have such an agency, and has one had it long enough to have any appreciable experience?
I think probably Dr. McGinnis or someone from Health and Social Services might be more qualified.
Yes, there's some models. Some have gone back for several years by virtue of state provisions, not because of public law 9647, but because of different state laws. One is Massachusetts, one is Michigan, one is California, and one is the state of Washington. There are some similarities in each of those four programs, but some dissimilarities. The only thing that's uniform is the lack of uniformity, so each one approaches a little bit differently. But virtually every state in the union within the last 6 months to a year have begun to get such agencies on screen.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
May I add one PS to what I've indicated before?
No, yes.
Okay, great.
I say yes.
Yes,
go ahead.
While I was in the chair, I did not mention that there are two very brief amendments we talked about with Senator Croft that we believe are important. They're mentioned in our position paper. One is the deletion of the word actual, which is not as significant in one of the lines, but one sentence does give the agency the authority, or really gives the state treasurer the authority to set up a special fund, and we are strongly recommending that in a departure from the Senate or the sponsor substitute, that a single sentence be added, which would read, there is established in the state general fund a continuing revolving reserve account to receive collections and make the authorized disbursements to the agency. And that's in your position paper. But the reason for that is that the nature of these collections are such that we do not want to get in the technicality of lapsed funds because they're all going to the general fund. We don't want them to lapse at June 30 because there will always be funds in transition. In addition, we do not want to get in a position where we would have to have all of these collections in unknown amounts each year a part of the appropriations. So Mr. Mullen in the Department of Finance tells us that the language of this sort of those laws can be corrected, and there will be the same kind of accountability. But we do think that sentence is needed, and we have heard Senator Croft, and it's his opinion that perhaps that these changes can just be included in the sponsor substitute without rewriting the whole new bill.
Would you take a look on page 2, I believe it goes starting on line 8, would it not?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. The chair would entertain a motion to add these amendments if the committee members so silent.
You mean add that amendment there?
That would be
035.
Right. And then the one sentence.
Well, I have some on actual
cost. Well, let me see if I can locate it. At one point, the text in the bill is actual cost.
Yeah, I see that in your third paragraph here.
Commissioner, would it be possible, anytime the department has any recommended amendments, to have a section where it would go off and make a lot easier?
Yes, we did, of course, propose that one. The word actual also should have shown on the line item. And we can locate for you. The text in the bill says actual cost, and we feel that that would be so difficult because of some technical problems that the word cost would be quite sufficient. It's just a deletion.
Line 19, page 4.
Line 7 and 19.
The space that we're concerned about is page 4, line 7, the last word, actual, we propose to come up.
If you look at the sponsor...
You just want the word
no,
actual.
No, this is sponsor substitute.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in the line 7, page 4.
Right.
Well, then what kind of cost would it be? What would you be determining your cost by?
Some of the individuals working on it felt that in using the word actual might more demand in every case an entire amount, perhaps some on the part of those who would not be able to pay. And we feel that in developing regulations that there would be somewhat more flexibility in developing the fair and equitable schedules if the word cost were left with some degree of flexibility. We felt the word action would tie it much tighter than we would be wishing.
Mr. Chairman, I would move an unanimous consent that we amend sponsor substitute manual page 4, line 7 of the meeting board action.
And would you incorporate the other amendment also?
In the same motion. And that we amend on page 2, between line 7 and 8, by adding the new section
47.3.035. Now, it's consent to agree, adding to adopt the additions of the section 47.3.035, and is it deleting the word action? No objections, so ordered. Now,
on line 9, to make it consistent with the amendment which you've now passed, on line 9 of page 4, it should then read, can be paid into the fund of the state specified in 47.3.035. This makes reference to the fund which the new amendment creates.
We would delete the word general fund of the state and insert fund established in
4.3.035. The chairman is coming.
I would
move to just have the motion. Is there objection to the motion? No objection, sorry.
Excuse me, I have to confess to a short postscript myself, if I might. I have a letter here that Mr. Snowden prepared at the request of Senator Ziegler at a time when we were all under the misapprehension that this bill was going to his committee, and I would like to submit it to the proper committee, it being yours. It has an effective summary of the testimony that I gave.
Okay,
and that's all I have. Thank you.
Richard Burham, is that how you pronounce it? Yeah, from the AG's office. You may.
My name is Richard Burnham. I'm the State Attorney General. And I'm here to state our support for the bill. I reaffirmed what Susan Burke said about the importance of this agency to the state and of the bill that sets it up. Right now, we have numerous cases sitting in our offices which we are just not staffed to handle. Because of that, we cannot absorb the court function either. And until something is established to absorb that void, there's nothing going to be happening with those cases. Because of our feeling of the importance of the agency and the bill, we became somewhat involved in the establishing of the structure and functions for the agency. and we made some recommendations as to what we thought the structure would look like based upon our experience with ERISA cases and based upon some knowledge of how the court system ran its organization. We did have some disagreements with the agency. We made some suggestions that possibly more clerical staff should be included rather than administrative, because it was our experience that the clerical staff perform most of the functions that will be performed by the agency, mostly sending out papers and just form letters and things. We made our suggestions to the agency, and I got a quick look at what the organizational structure looks like now. It appears most of our suggestions were not included in it, and so be it. We support the organization as it stands. We are attorneys and not the professional administrators. If Health and Social Services felt that those were appropriate to be included, then we support the organization as it stands.
Are there any questions? Representative Lisa Rudd, I'm sorry that I skipped you when you came in. Feel free to finish your testimony.
Thank you. I just wanted briefly to share with you, I support this bill very strongly. I wanted briefly to share with you two letters that I've received from people who are due child support payments and having trouble collecting them since the court has gone out of the business, and I just wanted to let you know that this is of great interest to people who are writing to me, and I thought I'd just read, if I may, their letters to me so that you may have the benefit of their concern. I'm writing to urge you to move as quickly as possible in setting up another plan or agency for collecting child support payments. In my own case, I have a job and manage fairly well financially by doing without a car and other things. But I do need the child support payments due me. My ex-husband has a good year-round job with where and makes extra money on the side, but the court trustee has had to threaten him with court action from time to time as he will not pay otherwise. Right now he owes me $757 in arrearage, which the court trustee was slowly but surely collecting from me. This $757 represents a lot of things my daughter needs. In the enforcement void that now exists, I'm afraid the arrearage will rise to an amount that I will never be able to. Again, I urge you to take prompt action to alleviate the present situation that affects so many of our Alaskan children. Another letter said, another matter of personal concern to me is the present lack of enforcement authority for the collection of court-ordered child support in the state of Alaska. My two dependent children are the recipients of such support, and we have been served well over the years by the court trustee's office here in Anchorage. This office has now been prohibited from any collection efforts, and no other agency has been power to step into the gap. It is my understanding that there has been legislation introduced to create an agency outside the court system with the necessary power to make these collections. I would urge speedy passage of some collection authority, either in or out of the court system, both for my own children and for others that may be in more dire straits than we are. I understand that some federal assistance money may be lost to the state as a whole if there is no enforcement of child support by the state. Chairman, I simply wanted to bring these letters to your attention because I know that probably there aren't very many people who can make it down here or who are in immediate need of this agency, and I simply wanted to bring those to your attention.
We appreciate the testimony. Would you mind, are there any questions by anyone? Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on our sponsor substitute percent bill 659? Yes.
Yeah,
just briefly. Yes. Could you give your name?
My name is Don Flockman from Alaska Legal Services. I won't keep you too long. I think you've had distributed just a summary of a memorandum I prepared for the sponsor of the bill that pretty much restates what Susan Burke said. Just one thing has occurred to me just while we've been here. I assisted in drafting the sponsor substitute. I think it's important to understand what you've heard here today, which is that essentially all the agencies involved are supporting this bill. I encourage it to be passed. That includes Alaska Legal Services. We're very concerned that people do not know now who is responsible for assisting people collecting child support, and I hope that question will be answered by this bill. The specific question I have is with regard to the effective date. we discussed this with in the sponsor substitute. The effective date, as you will notice, is July 1, 1976. A question arises, now that I have just seen the fiscal note, which has been distributed, there was an appropriation in FY76. It occurs to me that some of the activity for implementing this agency has already occurred, and it's possible that an immediate effective date would be appropriate. I don't know. I have not discussed that with the department, but it's something maybe that the committee could consider, since I think the period between now and July 1, there are going to be a considerable number of people who need child support payments.
If I may, as a recommendation to the committee, would be to allow the bill available to this for finance, to go to finance committee and have them, with the note of hand, saying we would like to put in a particular effective date.
I have noticed the effective date, starting to raise that question earlier, but then when I realized, and perhaps this is something we should ask the department now, we were talking about putting together a whole new agency and bringing on 22 new people and transferring over 7 others. Would you be able to do it immediately, or would it take until July to get geared up to do it?
Well, normally, in setting up an agency of this sort, if it's done the way it should be done, there ought to be a lead time of about 8 months. But we don't have 8 months. And so, therefore, if we do plan under the authority that's already on the books under federal law, and no contradiction in state law, to proceed immediately to transfer certain functions and certain people and certain funds subject to the approval of the court people, and to create a smaller beginning agency, hopefully even within the next 30 days. Now, you see, the risk we would be taking in doing that is that if for any reason this bill did not finally pass, we would then be shifting some people and activities that might then have to be backed away in some fashion later. But the reality is that the department has been designated as the agency responsible for the implementation of 93647.
So it wouldn't cause your problem to have that an immediate effective date?
No. Okay, we could, it won't be done in exactly the same way, but it could be done. And we do plan to do it in any event, beginning within 30 days.
Thank you very much. Yes, I
am. I would move and ask the animal consent that we pass our sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 659 as amended with the Senate recommendation.
Is there any objection? How many of you passes do you have? Thank you very much for the time.
Director of the division.
What?
Assistant.
Do you have to do that?